Welcome to the Acoustic Guitar Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Grizzle. For this bonus Acoustic Guitar Sessions mini-sode, I'm joined by Naima Bach, a singer-songwriter with roots in Brazilian and British folk music. One quick note before we start. During our conversation, you may hear my dog barking in the background. Please accept our apologies in advance. He promises to be a very good boy during our recording sessions in the future. Our episode begins with an impromptu performance of a new song by Naima Bach, titled Showers.
Well, I can try, Lord, but I can't remember before. The veins on your hand show me the way. And nothing easy now, and nothing hard either. So just watch as you sway on stage. Object or some kind of muse, but I can't get close to you. So I'll say your name again and again. Like I sung.
How'd you get started playing guitar?
So I had my father played guitar, and so it was always around in the house. In Brazil, I was lucky enough to grow up with a family who, so my dad played guitar, predominantly electric, but at home he would play, you know, nylon strung. And then my auntie is a cello player, and my grandmother is pianist, and so I was kind of grew up with a lot of that stuff, mostly classical. They play classical music, and then so I had that kind of sonic world around me. Mm-hmm.
Is the guitar the instrument you mostly use for songwriting?
Yes, I used to use bass more. That was about 5 years ago or something. And like a lot of the songs that were on my first record, I initially wrote on bass, and then that was because that's what I was playing in the first band that I was in. But then, the last 5 years it's been all guitar, and I've tried to just have it with, like, make sure that the song is good enough, just guitar and voice, and then mm-hmm. only like quite a lot later start thinking about other things to put on it.
So your voice is pretty distinctive. I mean, how did you develop that distinct sound that you have?
I don't know, really. I think it is mostly just it being my voice. I found a recording not that long ago of me singing a Sandy Denny song when I was 13. And it was really funny to hear, because in my head I thought, oh, I've come this far with my voice and like kind of trying to be able to project more, or you know, doing trills better, or these like technical things that I sort of thought I was improving on, which I have improved on. But I listened to this recording of me when I was 13, and it is kind of the same, just like a few, like, you know, octaves higher. Yeah. So I just thought, well, I mean, yeah, you do sort of get what you're given in terms of your voice. And I remember once, like, someone said to me, which slightly contradicts what I said earlier, because there is always improvement, but I think that in terms of tone, and maybe that's mostly what comes across when people like have unique voices, is like the unique tone that they have. And I guess delivery as well, like depending on how far someone pushes their voice. And often I think the further that one pushes their voice, it can sometimes become more generic sounding. That's like not always the case, but I sometimes find that like the better a singer is, you know, like the more they kind of just sound like everyone else. You know, not every case, but so I, not that I resisted being a good singer, I just think that I had to like watch how far I wanted to push it. But into, and then the next thing would be doing folk, like doing choirs, singing folk a cappella songs. That's probably been the biggest helper in terms of learning how to like be more open with my, less shy with my voice.
Can you tell us a little more about your process for songwriting?
Yeah, I think that it's changed a bit over the last 6 months actually, because prior to 6 months ago, I would normally write 2 to 3 songs per year, which is just nothing. And I would be very, it would take me a long time to figure out exactly what I wanted to do with the song and what the lyrics should be, and it would just take me a long time to write it and finish it. And I sort of thought of this as like a, you know, a bit of a slow cooking attitude towards songwriting, which I was fine to function in, because I didn't ever, I mean, I'm grateful to myself for not ever really putting pressure on myself to write songs, and if I had periods of time, which I have had many, where I don't feel like writing songs, I don't beat myself up about it. My friend calls them the fertile void, which is, I quite like, because, you know, other things grow up in that time and you sort of ingest more than you put out, and I think that can be important. But the last 6 months, I've found that I'm back at university again, and doing something other than music has been the best thing for writing songs. it's probably like a strange brain trick, you know, the thing that you have to do, songwriting has become my procrastination, and so then I'm just writing loads of songs, which is fun. Oh no, I was gonna say, like, it's a lot of it is dependent on who I'm listening to, and if I've got an artist or a musician that I'm really invested in that period of time, over, it normally lasts 2 to 4 months where I just listen to one person predominantly. And if I have that kind of feeling towards a musician, then I'll write more songs, influenced by what they do. I listened to like Phil Elverum, so Microphones Mount Erie, but I hadn't known anything about him before last year, and then I found the Microphones in 2020 album song, and so I listened to his music for about 4 to 5 months, and I still listen to it quite a lot. And then also the last person has been about 3 months, I've predominantly just listened to like everything Will Oldham's done, so Palace Brothers, Palace Music, Bonnie Prince Billy, and actually those two are I'd probably just leave it at those two for the last period of time. Also Joanna Newsom and Joanna Sternberg.
Okay, let's talk guitars. What guitars do you play, and what do you like about them?
So I've had my first guitar that I got, which is the one that I played live up until a year ago, is the Yamaha FG 800 or something. I can't remember the exact model, but it was like £250, which is probably about $300, I'm guessing. It was very cheap, but it was very sturdy, and it stayed, you know, it didn't warp, and it stays in tune, and it was a really good guitar. But I kind of moved away from it. I just thought, well, I'm like, I thought, I, if I'm going to do this as a job, I need to get like a real expensive guitar. So I tried to buy, I kind of went through a few different guitars. I mean, shall I actually reel off all of the guitars? Is that going to be boring?
This is a guitar nerd podcast, so we're into it.
So yeah, so I had that Yamaha, and then I did, because I definitely wasn't a guitar nerd. I just thought, I want a guitar that looks cool. So I got a Hofner from, like, a 1964 Hofner. And it was very thin, which is, very thin, like V-E-R-I, thin. And it was not a great guitar, and it really went out of tune all the time. But everyone was like, wow, it looks so cool. And then I just thought, well, maybe I'll keep it as a kind of investment. You know, it's like pretty old, and it's been kept in good condition-ish. But and I've still got it. I've tried to sell it. No one wants it, so I don't know what I'm going to do.
I'm sure somebody out there wants it.
It's from 1964. Yeah. I feel like, I mean, my other option is just to hold on to it, you know, and then, like, in 40 years, it'll be worth loads more. And then I moved on to, and then I bought a Larive MG800, I think. I'm closing my eyes because I'm picturing the sticker inside the guitar, but I can't say that I know exactly what the model is for that. But an OM, I think the Larive was. And that was a really beautiful guitar, but it's too precious to take on tour or to play gigs with. It's really nice, and it's rosewood as well. And so I just keep it at home in its case and play it, like, every now and then. But this is acoustic guitars, actually. I realized I was talking about Hofner. Hofner was hollow body, which is, you know, half of an acoustic guitar.
Counts, yeah.
And then after the Larive, I've been kind of wanting to get a Martin for a really long time, but I haven't. They're really expensive, so I haven't quite managed to get myself a Martin yet. That's something that I'm going to work towards. But the main guitar that I play now is a nylon strung, which is this one. It's an Alhambra, and it's new. I bought it new for like $1,200. I actually will be able to tell you the model of this one. Well, that's a complicated model. Surely not. CSLR. I don't know. Crossover Alhambra. But it's got like a good... One of the main reasons I got this is mostly because... Well, I mean, it's also solid wood, so it's not laminate. And it's the microphone. There's a microphone inside rather than... I can't remember what the other kind of, you know, like, metallic pickup is.
Piezo pickup or something.
Yeah, it's not that. It's a Fishman, but it's tiny microphone in it, which just means that, like, I was using a J.R. Braggs pickup on acoustic guitars, and acoustic guitars are obviously difficult to play live with, and it's super venue dependent, like, dependent on the PA. I didn't really give it a second thought until a very honest and kind friend of mine 3 years ago said that the guitar sounds like shit. So I was like, right, I need to actually sort it out. And then since then, I've been on a really annoying journey of trying to find the right mix of, you know, because I'd prefer to play with a microphone to the acoustic guitar, just an external microphone to the acoustic guitar, but in the gigs that I play usually, which are like support slots, it's very kind of, you know, you got like 20 minutes to do a sound check, and the engineers hate you because if you use a microphone, it feeds back. And so I decided to get this guitar, it's still not perfect, and it doesn't sound great when you strum it, but it sounds beautiful when you finger pick it. And so it's been like the best thus far. But my you know, acoustic guitar pickup journey is not over. And actually, I think nylon strung, in terms of if you're going to be playing like just on your own, then I feel like the sound of it fills the room a little more. It's super warm and pretty loud as well. I mean, on its own without amplification, it's a lot louder than a steel strung. I've enjoyed my nylon strung life over the last 6 months. It's been good, and it changes the way I write songs as well, I think.
How so? How does it change your songwriting?
It's just a bit, veers one away from just doing the kind of, like, you know, like the very like basic strumming patterns, and it just asks to be finger picked, and it kind of means that I have tried to learn new techniques with that, not being like super successful, but I'm trying. A lot of the music some of my favorite musicians that play acoustic guitar, I realized only recently, play nylon strung. So like I was listening to an Aldous Harding record. She plays mostly nylon strung, other than when she plays piano. I know that Mount Eerie, a lot of Mount Eerie songs are on nylon. Some Jessica Pratt tunes are on nylon, but like, yeah, I've started noticing the difference, I guess, in tones a little bit more.
To hear more from Naima Bach, be sure to check out the show notes for this episode. If you're enjoying the Acoustic Guitar Podcast, please head over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/acousticguitarplus. This is a listener-funded show, and your pledge of $1 or $5 or $9 a month helps us continue to produce new episodes. Plus, you'll get instant access to a whole bunch of great perks, like exclusive live stream workshops, song transcriptions, and guitar lessons. If you aren't able to make a contribution at this time, we understand. Another way you can support the show without spending any money is to leave a 5-star rating along with a review on Apple Podcasts. This really does help with discoverability, and the more guitarists who tune in each month, the better. Thanks again for listening and for your support of the Acoustic Guitar Podcast.